National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History Number 2. My name is Marvin Herzog. My respondent's name is Evelyn Bloom. Today is Tuesday, February the 24th, 1998. Evelyn, what was the name of your deceased sister?
Leah Glidden.
You mentioned the large family get-togethers for your granddaughter's wedding and the bar mitzvah of your grandsons. Were these events in Israel?
Yes, in Jerusalem and on Kibbutz Maalei Gilboa, the bar mitzvah.
Can you tell us about the affair?
My granddaughter, the oldest one, 22, my daughter, who's now in Chicago with her husband as the Aliyah Shaliyah, was going with this young man when she was in Israel doing her Shirut Lumi, National Army Service, but National Service instead, and she was working in Sfat at an organization called Livnot Ulahibanot, which means build and be built, that Federation sponsor for English-speaking young people between 21 and 30 around the world. So there were people there from South Africa, New Zealand, Australia, Britain, and America. So that's where she did that. But during that time, this young man, I think she met him actually while she was there on the telephone when someone called another girl who was sharing an apartment with her. Anyway, she was here with her parents, and he came for Pesach. He had Seder with his own parents in Israel only one night, and then he spent Chol HaMoed with his sister in New York, and then he ended up coming to Pittsburgh where her whole family was, and then they went back to Chicago where her family is after Pesach was over, and he asked her to marry him, and she agreed. So they got engaged, but when she realized that the whole family, for the first time since we went to Israel to sit Shiva for my husband's burial in Israel in January 1990, would be the first time that all the rest of our family from America would be coming. So she says, if I don't have the wedding around the same time that the bar mitzvah is going to be of my son's son on the kibbutz, which we've been planning for 13 years, then everybody might not be able to come, especially the two doctors who have to make their schedules a year in advance usually. So she called back to Israel and asked her father-in-law-to-be, who works at the Renaissance Hotel, if there was a date of the ballroom open there in that time. So she got it about 10 days before the bar mitzvah. So that made it perfect. Instead of going to the bar mitzvah and staying the next Shabbos in Israel altogether, we went before the first Shabbos, before that, 10 days before, the day before the wedding, and we all stayed in the Renaissance Hotel, and the wedding was there. And over Shabbos, we went to different places because they had Sheva Brachas on Shabbos at his parents' home. And there wasn't enough room for all of my children and grandchildren. So they each went to different places. My son, single son, went to my son in Israel's kibbutz over Shabbos because he hadn't been there for a few years. And my daughter and her husband and family went to another friend of theirs who just made Aliyah down in Efrat, which is right opposite where my Israeli daughter lives in Elazar. But I was the only one from outside of the bride's immediate family that was invited there because his grandmothers were going to be there too. So that was all very nice. And then they went to different Sheva Brachot during the week that friends of theirs made as far down as in Rehovot, where Weizmann Institute is. And then on the following Tuesday, her family gave a Sheva Bracha at a kibbutz in Gush Etzion, right near where they do live, but a kibbutz that caters in their dining hall. So we all got together there, and then other people scattered around to do more sightseeing, and I went back up with my son to his kibbutz to get ready for the people coming, the whole family coming there, and they had extra apartments on the kibbutz, so each of the families was settled in a different apartment, and then we had all meals together Friday night and Saturday night, And then Sunday night, the kibbutz makes a dinner for 120 people that each family can invite whomever they want. The family, the relatives, their friends from outside, or people from the kibbutz, but they don't have to invite anyone from the kibbutz if they don't want to, because those people will have been there for Shabbos, but they can't handle except the immediate family on the kibbutz for Shabbos part itself. So that's why they make that, and that was a very interesting thing too, because in addition to his speech and his family playing a little skit about him, which I have pictures of, and his classmates making a little skit about him. Also, it was a real nice family get-together. And then the next day, we went back to Jerusalem. And the nice thing about the hotel was that it was after Sukkot, so they weren't, full up like they are over Sukkot, which is the next to Pesach, the fullest time of the year in Israel, Jewish-wise. And the hotel let us keep our things in our rooms, since we had so many rooms at the hotel, in there, closed up, and didn't charge us for the Shabbos that we were, two Shabbatot, that we were away during that time. So the wedding itself was very nice, and I guess
and you enjoyed it.
Yeah.
About how many people from the States went over? Do you have any idea?
Well, no. Our family was the largest contingent because my daughter, with her whole family was there, and my other daughter with her whole family, and my son and myself. On his side, he had his two grandmothers came, and his sister and her husband, who are living in New York at the moment while he's working on a doctorate in biology, and in whose apartment the bride and groom are now living while the sister and her brother are there, because he's going to school now in Bar-Ilan University.
When you travel, do you travel on El Al?
Most of the time, yeah. I'm a member of El Al Frequent Flyer, and I've already gotten some free trips over the years.
Wonderful. Can you tell me a bit more about the Catholic woman who became a dean at Duquesne Law School?
No, Duquesne University.
Oh.
Duquesne University.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah, that's where we ended. I forgot. I didn't keep that paper out here. She was a high school teacher at Schenley High School. My husband was 5 years older than myself. We met, actually, at the Y Day Camp. When I was 12 years old and he was 17, he was among the youngest counselors, and I was among the oldest students there. So we knew each other, but we didn't see each other until he came back from China for an R&R during the war in 1946. And his father by that time had changed shuls after his mother died and had come to the Tree of Life in Oakland, where the Playhouse is now, and was sitting beside my father. So he came to home for Yontif and to be with his father, and I was in shul there. So we remembered each other and we talked, and then we started going together by mail and visits back and forth for that year. And then we got married at the end of the year, also on Motse Yom Kippur. Rabbi Halperin was the rabbi there, and he had never married anyone, so he checked with Rabbi Leiter, Olive Shalom, from the Maimonides Institute, which is now the Amethyst House building, and he checked with him whether it was okay and what you'd do if anything different, and he was told yes, and we could the only thing we had to do was we had to break the fast from Yom Kippur, and then we could go on to the wedding. Usually you fast up until the chuppah, no matter what time of the day it is. But to show the difference between the fasting before the wedding and fasting for Yom Kippur. So I digress to fill you in on me and my husband on the way. But he was very active in the school newspaper at Schenley, one of the editors. And this teacher was in charge of the school newspaper as well. So they became very close friends. And later, I had her also 5 years afterwards as a teacher, and I also worked on the newspaper, but his family had created a very close bond with her and the other students with him, and with his family. So she became like a part of his family. So by the time I got into the picture with him, she was already part of the family. As a matter of fact, she wrote a story about the squirrels for our children after we had the first three children. And my husband used to take her to Mass on Christmas Eve, and we went to visit her at her house and with her Christmas tree, and she was invited to various family celebrations and with us here. So my kids called her Aunt Loretta. Her name was Loretta Byrne. And she went then, after she retired from teaching, she went on to be the dean at Duquesne University. Her brother was a priest, one of my husband's fellow students that was also friendly with her from Shenley High School became a priest also. And he was the one who recommended that my husband, as a Duquesne student, university alumnus, be named to join the Century Club, that each year they honor alumni who have gone on to prestigious accomplishments. And the year that my husband was accepted as an alumnus into that Century Club, they were having it down at the Duquesne Club, not related to Duquesne University, but also Duquesne, which of course didn't have many Jewish members at that time, of course. But they arranged to have a kosher meal there for us, a frozen kosher dinner. And they also arranged that we should be able to stay, it was Friday night, that we should be able to stay at the Hilton Hotel overnight without signing in and without paying and without baggage, because we went down, actually it was Erev Sukkot. So we went down early. I don't know where we left the car there or not, how we got there down there. And we went to shul at the Beis HaMedrash HaGadol Beit Yaakov Shul, which is the arena shul now. And we went to services there, and then we walked to the Duquesne Club, and then he was inducted into the Century Club, and then we went to the hotel, and then in the morning we got up and walked back to Squirrel Hill to our shul at the old Hebrew Institute building. Some of the people passed us along the way and said, "You need a ride?" And we said, "No, no, don't worry, we're okay." Those were the good old days.
Yes. is this lady who is dean of Duquesne University, is she still alive?
No. My husband was the executor of her estate. Let's see. Well, some of the furniture, I guess, around here is from her, but some of it is already over in Israel. Some of the furniture from her apartment is in my son's house in Israel, and some is in my daughter's house in Israel, and some is at my daughter's house here in Pittsburgh, and some is still upstairs in the house here that maybe my son, if he ever gets married, will take on with him too. That shows how close she was.
What an interesting story. Mm-hmm. With four energetic children, did you find time to join or be active in any Jewish organizations?
Oh, yes.
Or non-Jewish ones? Did you hold an office
in any of them? I was active in Hillel Academy, where they went to school, all of them. I ran the gift shop. I was fundraising vice president. I was honored by them at their first ever bond affair, where they went to the bond organization, the women from the Hillel Academy Women's Club at that time, which is now just the Hillel Academy Club, and said, "We want to honor Evelyn Bloom." I also ran the ad book for 5 or 6 years, and the bond office at that time was so shocked because nobody had ever come to them. They've always been soliciting different organizations. So that was one of the things that I thought of. I don't want to give it to you, but if it was something you wanted to make a copy of, or that, Later, I was honored by Technion. I've been active in Technion all the time since we've been back here in Pittsburgh. I told you I had family connections in Technion in Israel. My cousin's wife was the first student who became a professor there, and the first Israeli that became a president of an international scientific organization. She had a doctorate in civil engineering. She was the head of the civil engineering department. So I've been active in that. When my kids were at school, I started the Girl Scouts, Brownies, and Juniors for my daughters. And my husband was active in with the Boy Scouts that we had at the JCC from Hillel Group. And then we went on, and then when it came to the cadets, there weren't that many girls, and Alderdice didn't have a leader for their cadet Girl Scout troop. So then I took the Hillel girls over to Alderdice for our weekly meetings at Alderdice, and was the leader there. And then the girls both went on to be seniors down at the Road of Shalom, where, I forget her name, the woman who's since died, who was the Girl Scout leader through the seniors there that the kids connected onto. And I've been active in my synagogue, which was the Young People Synagogue, called also Bonei Yisrael, at the Hebrew Institute building up until it was turned over to another school. And now it's in the house that became a synagogue that we joined with right across the street from the old Hebrew Institute, which we called the Bnei Zion Synagogue. And we're renting there for 3 years, and then they will turn the congregation over to us because they were dying. They only had about 12 people for services and about 35 on Yontif, so we run the whole service, but they're there, the few of their members that have come regularly. But then when my husband had his stroke in 1986, we always walked all the way, the 2.5 miles up to Forbes. But when my husband had a stroke, I couldn't push the wheelchair all that way. So we joined the B'nai Emuna Synagogue, which is right down here on Murray Avenue, opposite the Giant Eagle, closest to our house. And I could push it that 5 blocks. But even coming home to push up, we put the driveway in back of the yard so we could drive right in. I was still driving at that time, and then I had to stop driving because of a brain tumor surgery that damaged my optic nerve. So we had somebody driving us, and that way he could get in and out of the house without having to walk any steps, because he couldn't keep his balance. That was his main thing, and his speech was slightly affected as far as volume more than anything else. So we joined that, and then I became vice president there and on the board. I'd been on the board at my synagogue. I'd been the first secretary, at the Young People Synagogue, and then a lay secretary. No, we didn't have any office. We're a shul that doesn't have a rabbi, and everybody does everything themselves. They
volunteers.
And everybody takes turns laying, speaking, doing everything else.
Wonderful. Having.
I'm also active in Hadassah, ZOA, Na'amat, and now Amit. There are 5 and Religious Zionists of America. I run the office here from my house for Religious Zionists of America. So.
There are only 24 hours in the day. How do you do all of these things? I guess if you want to, you can.
Yeah, that's why everything's around the house. I think it's more important to do things outside and with people than to worry about.
Having children who made Aliyah, tell us about their life in Israel when they first arrived. What was a typical day like?
Well, they both went to kibbutzim, religious kibbutzim. And they both went with their age group from around the whole United States that goes as a group. It's called a garin, which means a seed, the nucleus of a group getting together. And so they was not a matter of absorption. They all knew Hebrew quite fluently from Hillel Academy, going all through the high school and everything. By the way, my son was one of only 2 National Merit Scholars for the whole city of Pittsburgh the year he graduated high school. The other one was also a Jewish girl from Alderdice. That doesn't include Mount Lebanon, because that's not considered the city of Pittsburgh schools. I know there are always someone from Mount Lebanon, too, so I mentioned that since you guys are from Mount Lebanon. And so they didn't have the kind of problem of absorption, like if you make Aliyah and you go to live there yourself and you have to find a job. They had jobs on the kibbutz, whatever was needed to be done or whatever they were capable of doing, and then they rotated all the time. I told you, I think, that my son was working in the fields at the beginning, and then after the terrorist attack, he couldn't do that, so he was working inside and on the computer and things like that. And my daughter and her husband were down at another kibbutz down at near Gaza. Their fields went up to here, and the Gaza farmers' fields came back and were back to back. As a matter of fact, when I visited them one time there early, they had set fire to the crops at the edge right near their place, right when before harvesting. And in fact, the men driving the harvesting equipment and the other equipment, the motorized equipment on the equipment, always carried a gun with them for protection. Even at my son's kibbutz, their nearest two neighbors were two Arab villages, which had been on the other side of the border before 67. Both of these were kibbutzim that were started about 67 to ensure the security of the borders that had been the border at that time. And one year they also had fire when I was there, and the Israeli army came and had a car that kept traveling the road between the kibbutz and the Arab village 24 hours a day to prevent that. And one time on a yontif, there was a two-day yontif because it came either before or after Shabbos, I can't remember, they found when they went down to the fields where the irrigation pipes were put together and moved to different places before they put in the irrigation that I talked about before, I think, the drip irrigation underground, computerized. They found that all of the irrigation pipes were damaged, just smashed, that nobody had been down there for the 2 days and of Sabbath and the holiday, because they weren't working there, and that had been done. So those were the only problems that I remember, but nothing really close by. But each of the kibbutzim, oh, I have to tell you a very interesting story about that, where my daughter is now in Judea, in Gush Etzion at Elazar. They always have a soldier, each of these kibbutzim, this kibbutz has a soldier at a gate, a little guardhouse at the beginning, and recognizes people going in and out, the workmen and so forth. So I got off the bus coming back from Jerusalem by myself one day, and there's a big highway now that bypasses going through Bethlehem. So I had to cross that road, and I want to be careful, make sure. And then I saw behind me coming up over the field an Arab, followed by a lot of goats. And I thought, it's good. They'll be crossing the highway. They'll stop traffic. I won't have to worry about rushing across. So I got in with them, crossed the road with them. And then when we crossed over, then they went towards the right because the fields were over on that side, and they were going to have them still graze there. And I walked over to the gate. Well, for the first time, the guard had gotten out of his guardhouse, the Israeli soldier, and was standing barring the entrance to the gate. And he asked me who I was, because he was suspicious. He thought I was coming with the Arabs and that I was going to be a suicide bomber or something like that. So I had to identify myself. I showed him my passport. I explained to him who my daughter and her husband and family were. But that's one of my favorite stories, to tell you how life is when you're living with side by side with
danger.
People.
It's dangerous.
Okay. Okay.
During the Gulf War, Evelyn, when Israel was being bombed, did any in your family who were there think of returning to the United States?
Absolutely not. Not then, but even more so. I mean, that really wasn't a danger, thank God. Not that many people were injured. I don't even know that anyone was killed, except someone, I think, with a heart attack. But the actual daily suicide bombings and the particularly with my daughter's place on that Bethlehem Road, there were been a lot of shootings and killings just on the road. Just so that in itself is a danger. But nobody has ever mentioned the possibility because they know they went there to rebuild the Holy Land, and you're not going to rebuild it. If you give up and run when there's danger.
Right.
And I don't worry about them because when I wake up in the morning and I turn on the radio, the television, I hear this kind of person was shot around the corner, here, across in Homestead, across in Homewood. So you have to think in perspective.
Of course. Let's talk about your husband now, Evelyn. Where did his forebears originate?
In Courland, K-O-R-L-A-N-D. It's between Russia and Germany. It's really more near the end of Germany. And we couldn't find it on any maps, but that's what her husband said. But when my son, while he was in college, went with three other classmates for a trip to Russia, this is before the Russians were allowed out. They went as tourists, but they were sent by a Jewish organization specifically to go to the synagogues and places and meet with Jewish immigrants who were prisoners of Zion who weren't able to go out. So, and he went to St. Petersburg at that time to the Hermitage, and on the wall in the Hermitage was a big, beautiful map, and he's located Courland. On that map. I've never seen it on any other map.
Do you know